Hey, everybody, we're back here. This is the American Spectator, our education symposium. And I am joined today with a longtime friend, somebody who I absolutely love, Carol Markowitz, who is a best-selling author of Stolen Youth that you can see right here. I urge you to go out and buy it. It is fantastic. But before we get into what you wrote about, because it's so, I actually learned a lot about you reading it. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But first, let's talk about how we met. It's been a long time. Yeah, it's
really, I can't even, is it the blog days?
It is the blog days. And I knew you before you had children. Mm-hmm. I knew you when you told me that you were never going to get married.
Marriage is for suckers. That was me back then.
That was you back then. And I said, never say never. And then you said, and then you got married. And then you're like, I don't know if I'm having children. And I was like,
Once you got married, you knew.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. We got married in April. I was pregnant in May. Like it was also, my husband was my best friend before we ever got together. So he had heard all of my, I'm not getting married, I'm not having children. Same for many years. So as soon as we like kissed, he was like, but let's discuss some stuff. Like, you know, I don't want to get into this if you're not, you know, going to have kids, and if you're not, you know, going to take my last name, you're going to have kids, and you know.
Oh, yeah. He kind of laid the law down.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm in for all of
that. Oh, that's so great. So like the first time we met in person, I will never, ever forget, because it was my birthday. And I can't remember if, I think I was turning 40, maybe.
No.
It was a big day. It was either 40 or 45. Have we known each other 15 years?
Yeah.
Okay. So it was 40.
Yeah. I have a 14-year-old. We've known each other. I mean,
okay.
Man, we're old. I'm coming up on my 15th wedding anniversary.
Okay. So it was. So it was before that. So my 40th birthday was spent in New York City, and you were partying the night before, and so was I. And we were in that crappy cafe. Yeah. I can't remember.
I think we were at the Odeon. It's not
That's
like,
right.
Yeah.
And we were both so hungover.
I recall this.
I do too. And all I remember about that breakfast, besides the fact that I know what you're gonna say. I absolutely loved you, was seeing the rat go by, and I was like, ah. Anyway, so that's how I know how long I've known Carol. And I loved you the minute that I met you online, but it was cemented when we met in person.
Yeah.
And Carol's just one of these wonderful, wonderful people who's so smart and so interesting. And you're
thank you.
Are you still into poker?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, drove by like on the way here, a place that has poker, and I called my husband and I was like, we should go play.
Yeah. Okay, so I mean, I'm not good. Carol's good, but anyway, we both like Texas Hold'em. But anyway, so let's get into your book, because I almost don't know where to start, because the themes are so heavy and so important and so relevant for education. Now, for you, remember, like, so the third time, never say never, was moving to out of New York.
Yeah, I had a lot of I will never.
You will never. Totally did. Right, right. Because you had just renovated your place in Brooklyn, I think.
Yep.
And it was your dream place, and everything was wonderful. And then COVID happened, and you have these three wonderful babies. And what are you going to do with them? And school was nuts in New York. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So my husband and I are both immigrants. I was born in the Soviet Union. He was born in Israel. We both came to New York as children, as small children. And we lived the New York dream. You know, we renovated a townhouse in Park Slope, which is all we've ever wanted. Mm-hmm. We move in March 2020. And COVID destroyed New York. It really broke some things. And of course, it exposed some things as well. It didn't cause all the damage. It exposed a lot of things that were rotting already. But for example, my kids were in public school, and the private schools opened in the fall and the public schools didn't. And the people who had spent the whole summer marching for equity, saying, you know, how important it was to have this equity, they sent their kids to private school. Or they moved to their beach house and sent them to the open schools there. Or they did, you know, a pod and they hired a tutor, and they didn't care one bit about the kids who couldn't afford to do that. And I had grown up really poor in Brooklyn. I had a very, you know, just my childhood was one where like my kids live in a magical wonderland that they don't even cannot even possibly understand what my life was like. And I grew up poor in a bad neighborhood, and I am still in touch with all the people that didn't go to college and maybe never finished high school. And their kids were not going to get to go to school because the people who lived in the wealthy parts of New York didn't care about them at all while marching for equity. So all of that really killed me. And the New York Post was amazing to me. My editor at the time was Sohrab Amari, and every week, I'd say, Sohrab, I have to write about how schools are closed again. I have to write it again because schools are still closed and kids are falling off track. And so it was a really hard time. Again, seeing New York as I always kind of saw it as this place where we were like badasses and we were like fight the power, and we also were very helpful to each other during, after 9/11 or after the blackout of 2003. Everybody joined together and kind of worked together and helped each other. The pandemic exposed that New York had really, it was Trump derangement syndrome. It was because Donald Trump wanted the schools to open that New Yorkers decided they did not want the schools to open. And there were so many things like that. Donald Trump wanted to be tough on crime. New York decided, no, we cannot be tough on crime. We have to just let criminals out. We have, I used to be somebody, for example, that thought that the bail amounts were way too high. This is crazy. These bail amounts, you're making these bail amounts for like shoplifters, $10,000, and you may as well make it 10 million. I used to be pretty into that. I didn't think make it zero. I didn't think like, oh, somebody who assaults somebody gets out on bail with $0. It's just the insanity that New York sunk into during that time. I saw it was going to either never recover or take a long time to recover, and they're, nowhere near recovery now. So we moved to Florida. We moved to the free state of Florida, the paradise of Governor DeSantis, and it's been incredible. And my kids are thriving, and I did what I had to do for my children.
Now, are your children in the public schools here?
Mixed. I have one in public, two in private. So, yeah.
I mean, the nice thing is, without any state, does state income tax, does Florida have it?
No state income
No,
tax.
because I'm from Texas and we don't have it either. All of a sudden, a lot of money is freed up to do things for your children that you can't do in New York.
A lot of things like that down here that you don't have to pay for. And and the schools are great. The public schools are great. I, you know, it's just, you know, we have quirky decisions for why two in private, one in public, but
Well, kids are weird. I had three of
turns out
them.
they're all
They're
different,
all
you know?
different and very different. And you have to
Who
make
knew?
different choices for them.
So, but it's been, we feel like geniuses every single day. Every time any news out of New York, we feel brilliant and we feel lucky. So.
I'm glad you're here. Okay, so in the book, you talk a fair amount about the totalitarianism of the left and coming from a communist country and having experienced the pressure. And you talk about how difficult it is for adults to push back against it, but how children are kind of helpless victims in a way of this kind of social pressure that we see in totalitarian regimes, but is now here in the United States. And you make a statement in there, and it's stuck with me, that it always starts with the children. Oh, and I was like, it's so true. Can you explain what you were talking about? Because I think that's what we're seeing here too.
Because I think people need to understand that it's a cultural revolution that we're going through, or that they're trying to force on us. It's not one thing, it's not part of society. They're trying to alter everything. And in the book, we open with a chapter on history, like you said. And it's about the forced conformity that is being pushed on all of us, but it's much easier to achieve on the children. Like little things that you don't even think about. Like, why do they teach climate change to kids? Why? Okay, even if you are a climate change, you believe in climate change, you think climate change is super important, you're into it. Why teach it to kindergartners so that they won't sleep at night and think that the world's going to end? What's the point of that?
Right.
They can't help you solve climate change. They can't give you solutions. And that's what they actually asked these kids to do, like to think about like, oh, solutions. So my, at the time, first grader drew this thing with, helicopters flying into caves and spraying water. And that's what you get when you ask a first grader to think about what, how to solve things like climate
It's
change.
probably a better idea than what a lot of lefties are coming up with,
Well,
actually.
yes.
I mean, the helicopters and caves at least sounds cool. And
Right, the paper straws do
the
nothing.
paper straws are just annoying and do nothing,
Right.
and they can pollute the
Yeah.
environment even worse.
You think about things like that, and you think about why do they teach it in this way? But the conformity is the most important part. And when you had in Brooklyn the Black Lives Matter signs in the window and the defund police signs in the window, it was the spectacle that was important. And a story that I tell in the book, my great grandfather died in a gulag, in Stalin's gulag. I was raised by my grandmother and her sister. They really played like a giant role in my life. And their dad was taken away for the crime of owning a bakery. One day it was okay to own a bakery, one day it wasn't. Didn't help that they were Jews. And so I grew up with the stories of that happening in my family. But what I want people to understand is when Stalin died, my grandmother and her sister, who had had their dad murdered by him, made a scrapbook of Stalin's wonderful life, because that is the spectacle. That is, you can't just support the cause. You must put the sign in the window. You must wear the pin. You must have the bumper sticker. You have to do the whole package. And they do this so that nobody steps out of line. And that's the thing that these totalitarian societies, it's all one way. And in China, they call it the main melody. The main melody runs through everything. And if you see that in the US, you can't unsee it. My kids always point out, like in commercials that start, we believe this car is the best car. But it's always we believe. And it's like our values, what we think. And it's not accidental. It's absolutely by design. I have to make this other point, but touring for the book was extremely eye-opening. And so the one thing that I always say to people is, if you live in a red area, don't feel safe. Don't
No.
think that everything's okay. And that's what I kept encountering. I found it much harder to talk to people in red states because they think everything's okay. They think their local school is fine. And they think that their values are the values that are going to be taught at their local school. And that's just not the
That's
case.
interesting.
So the flip side of that is, I met tons of people whose kids don't talk to them anymore, who their kids are in college or beyond. They got brainwashed at school. They think their parents are, insane MAGA people. And they have a broken family. And so what I always ask these people, I'm like, did you guys talk your values at home? And they all come from red areas, and they say, we thought we were safe. We thought this was a New York, San Francisco, problem. We didn't think that this would be us. And so the main thing that I want people to understand that is that even in totalitarian societies, people lay down the law at home, and they lay down their values at home. And they had to live under scary, circumstances where you could get in trouble for that. You don't. You live in a free country. Tell your kids what matters. Tell them your values. Speak them. Make sure that they know. Make sure that they're going to college with a base laid down so that they aren't presented with these new ideas for the first time ever.
Well, to your point, two things come to mind. One is I had a guy from New York, actually, in Manhattan. His kids were in private school, one of the schools that made the news. And he was saying, I don't know what to do. They've changed everything. And I said, pull your child out. And he said, but they won't get into an Ivy. And I was listening to that, and I was like, you are making the choice of the you are sh shifting and changing the trajectory of his daughter's life because you're more worried about social conformity than you are about the health and well-being of your daughter. Now, I didn't say that to him because,
I'd say it.
well, I didn't know him well
Yeah.
enough to, but if it were somebody I knew better, I'd say it. But I was just like, having been further down the road with my kids being older, you're making choices every single day. I remember one time my daughter was studying for an AP exam, and talk about curriculum that's completely biased is the AP curriculum, and it's ubiquitous. It's across the country. So if your kids are taking it, just for an idea, Paul Krugman is the editor of the economics class. All right. Now,
You
I
didn't
don't.
think the internet was going to make it,
No,
so.
exactly. He's a genius. And then in one of the classes they were talking about, it was their history AP test, and they were talking about the time around the Magna Carta and this and whatever, and the history was wrong. And so I'm sitting there with my daughter and her friends and saying, no, that's not what happened, and that's not when it happened. And her one of her very best friends said to me, I know, just don't tell me the truth. I've got to study for the test. And so, like, I was constantly, they would come home and talk about something, and it's a constant, you have to be constantly engaged. When my daughter, this is in Texas, the curriculum in first grade, they have during Black History Month, which was last month, for the first week, all the curriculum is about, now, mind you, these children have not learned about the founding fathers. They have not learned about any basics about civics in America, about how America is an extraordinary place compared to every other place in the world. They've learned none of that. She came home from school crying one day and said, "Why did we kill Martin Luther King? Why did we kill him?" I said, "Well, first," and I'm like seething, "we did not kill Martin Luther King. A person killed Martin Luther King." But she was just devastated as she took the message, which was the message that was trying to be transmitted, that white people are bad, and killed the greatest black man that's ever lived on this planet. And had no concept of any other history, anything. And she's a sweet, sensitive little girl. And I was so incensed. And then a friend of mine who is a teacher, an elementary school teacher, she looked at me one time because I told that story, and she's like, "I taught that curriculum. I didn't even know what I was doing." And she was a solid conservative person. If you are not thinking, and I'm contrarian and a pain in the butt just generally as a person.
Same, yeah.
So, like, I'm just like that fly in the ointment pretty much in every set of ointments
Gotta
everywhere.
be,
Yeah. I mean, I threw a fit one time at a Lutheran summer camp because, well, I can't get into it, but let's just put it this way. There were certain things that were happening, and I wasn't Lutheran. My kid was going, and I was having a cow. But, like, I don't have a problem with that. I'm like, if you're going to have access to my kids, I'm sorry if I make your life uncomfortable, but my kids matter. And if you don't have that almost hostility coming into your
It's tough.
perspective, yeah. I mean, be charitable and kind and whatever, but the biases against the parents inherent in the system. And so the pressure you're talking about is there, it's real, and they're expecting conformity. If I had one piece of advice when you have problems with the school, bring your husband. All the women the biddies who run these institutions don't know how to handle male energy. It's true. And so, like, when things were bad, I brought my now ex-husband, but he would be there in these,
It's interesting.
because they would be like, when a pan
Right.
was round.
It's funny.
They'll bully the single parent, though. They will bully women in general. Okay, so the other thing, I mean, there's a lot of aspects of this book that you talked about, the education of young people. So the totalitarianism part of it is there, the conformity part of it is there, starting with the children and indoctrinating them is absolutely key. What do you recommend besides educating them at home? A lot of people are talking about, pulling their kids out. What if you can't pull your kids out and homeschool them? What do you suggest for that?
It's really tough because I co-authored this with Bethany Mandel, and we're quite different. She homeschools her six children. Again, mine were all three in public when I wrote this. And we have kind of different paths. So the book is not just about schools. It's also about how the kids are being indoctrinated at the doctor's office and at, and at the library and all these other places.
Can you talk about the doctor's
Yes, that's
office? That's a,
actually by
such an
far the scariest chapter to
it is,
me. My
yes.
Bethany wrote that chapter, but I find that chapter to be absolutely terrifying. We are in big trouble. But so the thing is that Bethany kind of does pull her kids out of society. She pre-reads their books. She pre-watches anything that they're going to watch, etc. Whereas I give my kids sort of more leeway on that kind of thing, and I provide the basis at home. That's to me the
That
way
was
that
how I
that's
operate
how
it.
I do it.
Yeah.
And there it is two different paths.
But my
And
brother did what Bethany's doing.
right. And
Yeah.
I think both are valid ways to do it. Look, I have three kids. My older two, I refer to them as the woke police. They come home from school and they're like, is this something? Is this something? And sometimes it is, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's you're just gonna learn about this, and that's there's not an agenda there. But the medical chapter is so by far the most terrifying one because A, they try to get access to your kids without you. There's a fantastic, I know we're talking about my book, but I'm obsessed right now with Abigail
Miguel Pryor. I was
Shrier's.
gonna, if you didn't bring it up, I was going to.
Abigail
It's so
Shrier's
good.
book, Bad Therapy, I highly recommend.
Highly
Everybody
recommend
go
it.
buy it. It just came out this last week. It's already on the path to being a bestseller.
It's
It
so
is
good.
stellar. It is so well done. She opens the book with a taking her younger son to the doctor, and he has a stomach ache. And she had just actually handed in this book, so she's already written Bad Therapy. But the doctor says, "Can you step out of the room? I just want to ask your son some questions." And Abigail says, "I stood up." And then I was like, "Wait a minute, I'm not leaving the room." But that's, for Abigail Shrier, who just wrote this book about how they indoctrinate kids through therapy, how, therapy is really not a positive for children. And for her to, she's like, "I stood up." And so you have to think, like, it's a tough thing to do to say, no, actually, I'm not leaving the room. And so what she discovered when she didn't leave the room was that the doctor was going to ask her son questions about whether he's suicidal. And it was like
Without her present.
without her present. And it was like five questions of like, have you thought about killing yourself this way? Have you thought about like, and
You know, the problem with this is it plants the actual
it plants this
idea. So
idea. Like,
a ch happy
yes.
child is like, what is suicide?
Right. Like, and how do I do it again? Like,
Right.
there's a lot of jokes that the kids have about how they only find out about drugs at like anti-drug seminars at their
Right.
school.
Right.
And it's like, this drug makes you feel like this, and this drug makes you
Right.
feel like this. And like, got it.
Yeah, right. Good to
Noted.
know. Noted.
I will take that information. But we're doing that on a large scale to kids, and we're giving them information that they simply don't need to have. I'm planting these ideas in their heads that, they really just are irrelevant. He had a stomach ache. What does that have to do with him being suicidal? And the fact that they want the mom out of the room, they want the parent out of the room, there's something really sinister going on there. One of the things that Bethany wrote about in her medical chapter is, of course, the trans conversation and how, doctors plant the idea of, do you feel uncomfortable in your body? Like every single teenager throughout the history of
Exactly.
humanity has felt, well, maybe you're a gender that you weren't born with. And again, going back to Abigail Shrier, she wrote a whole book about how girls were most susceptible to this and how there's so much evidence that this idea gets introduced and it spreads like a contagion. It's, when you have a Girl Scout troop with, and Bethany writes about that in the chapter. I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was like 10 girls in the Girl Scout troop and six of them are trans. Like,
Come on.
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the
It's.
thing is, it used to be less, I mean, less. You would go through your goth phase. These girls would go through
Right.
their goth phase, or they dabbled in lesbianism in college, right? Like they had a phase.
Right.
By the way, 85% of those girls, 90%, I forget the data on it exactly, end up straight and married
Right.
and having kids. But
Yeah.
so
Yeah.
like they're rebellious things. They get the nose ring, maybe a tattoo. Dad, I don't like you. I'm dyeing my hair
Right. They
black.
don't cut off their
No,
breasts.
they don't.
Yeah.
But now we
Yeah.
have this medical intervention and we have this bias both in the medical community and in the educational community reinforcing this absolutely pathological, situation where children can be put on these drugs, completely neutering them. They're not reversible. And And it's a phase. And I don't know about you, but I didn't enjoy my teenage years.
Who enjoys their teenage years?
Exactly. And this is what I told
Yeah.
my daughter in particular, it's harder for girls because bodies change at different rates and whatever. And I was like, it's as bad as you feel like it is, but it will pass.
Right.
And that's what a child needs from their parent. There's nothing wrong with you. You're totally normal. It's going to be okay. I know this feels bad. There's data about how girls within 1 year of going through puberty, something like 75, 80% experience depression. Well, so now these girls who are doing something totally normal developmentally are thinking that they might be another gender.
Right. And you know, it's also kind of interesting that this comes from the left where, you know, the patriarchy, my daughter left the Barbie movie being like, I never need to hear the word patriarchy ever again. But yet it's like they're saying maybe you're a boy. Maybe being a boy is better. And how does that fit in with all the other values that they're teaching that you could be a strong woman, but maybe in order to really be strong, you're actually a boy.
Well, not only that, so you have kids. If my boys played with a doll, I didn't think that they were a girl. I
Right,
mean, so
right.
toys are suddenly gendered, and
Yes.
feminism was all about getting rid of gendered toys
Exactly,
and
right.
experiences. So your girls can play with blocks, and they can. And I, as a girl, I played with Legos as a kid and liked it.
Yeah.
It didn't mean I was a boy,
Right.
and I played sports with the boys too. And then all of a sudden puberty hit and I kept losing. So, I mean, things changed.
Right.
So, that's just life. So, okay. Yeah. So do get Abigail's book. I too received it. It's
Fantastic.
fantastic. Just, and terrifying.
Yeah.
And the other thing that is asked during med, you know, if they do ask you to leave a doctor's appointment, they'll ask you whether or not there are firearms in the home without the parents around. As
Well,
if
I tell everybody we have firearms in
yeah.
the
Well, you're on a
home,
list now,
so
probably
good.
multiple.
Good. I
Yeah.
want to be on
You'll be,
the
you and I will be in the gold
list.
block together here.
Right.
I mean, nervous laughter at this point here in the United States, but okay. So, now we've hit the medical thing. I keep going back to the education because that's where I think the indoctrination happens. And I think that it's a subtle thing too. So I'll tell you something that bothers me. So my kids are out of the public school system now. So there's a lot I can say before I would, raise a stink, but had to keep some of it in check because it would have been nonstop. But one of the things that they did, two of them that drove me crazy was, and was different than how I was raised, was keeping the lunchroom absolutely silent, not letting the kids really talk. And usually,
Is that true?
well, yeah, it was
Yeah,
true in my
really?
kids'
Oh,
schools. Yeah.
wow.
So they would, you had to use like whispering voices to talk at the table. And you couldn't like just talk. And when they had kids lined up, they would have them hold their hands behind their back and walk in line because they didn't want children touching each other. Like how boys, jostle around in line or whatever. And I was like, what are we teaching our children overall? Like, step back from the order that is being imposed by these ninny teachers. But beyond that, there's a level of like just conformity to authority that I found repugnant. I was like, it's kind of like when the whole BLM thing happened and I saw people kneel. As an American, it just made me violently angry. I was like, I'm an American. I don't bow to monarchs and I don't bow to you. I don't bow to anybody. God, that's it. Everybody else can bite me. But it just like, I was like, get off your knees. What is wrong with you? We're Americans. We don't do that. Anyway, but that kind of passive,
Obedience.
institutional, obedience imposed.
Yeah,
Now,
it's scary. I mean, and you know, during COVID that hit astronomical kind of numbers. Everybody was just obedient to such an extent. And kids in particular, it's funny, I never had the quiet lunch. But during COVID, it was like the kids ate outside. And I'm talking already, you know, into 2021, 2022, the kids would eat their lunch on the ground outside in New
In the
York in the
cold
cold.
weather.
And of course, all the senior citizens who were actually susceptible to something, were eating in like restaurants and like they're fine. I would constantly point out that the governor, Kathy Hochul, is this elderly woman who's like traipsing around the state, no mask, obviously, because masks didn't work. But she is in restaurants and she's living her life. And meanwhile, my kindergartner is sitting on the ground outside. But when on the really cold days, they would move them inside to the cafeteria and they wouldn't let them talk. They'd say, you can't speak. And so my daughter, who was in middle school, she was like, I prefer eating outside on the ground. At least I could talk to my friends. And a lot of that is, again, related. It's a control thing. They can get to the kids, they can make them do what they want, and it leads to other levels of control.
Okay, so do we have any questions?
We do.
Okay, let's shoot.
You guys want to talk? Just encourage people to go ahead and start asking.
Yes, everybody, start asking questions. Feel free, and we'll get Carol's answers to all your questions. Okay, going through COVID, what do you think the long-term effects? Now, I've seen the younger generation seems to be a lot more mulish and rebellious. And I'm not talking just about the social ills by a whole bunch of kids. So, for example, in my kid's high school, a really interesting self-selection happened because school started back up the next fall. It was a closed for after, the March that you're talking about, 2020, closed. And then they allowed for the next year, you could send your kids back or not. Well, all the conservatives sent their kids back. So about one third of the school was empty of all the libs. Well, first off, it was just peaceful. There were no fights. Everything was great. Seriously,
No,
like
it's
it was
great.
great. And so, and the two groups, like the trouble kids and then the really smart kids at the academy, all their parents had them stay at home, right? And then everybody else, all the normies were at school and having a grand old time. The kids who came back, though, who had been forced to stay at home by their parents, they had more fights in 6 weeks, in the first 6 weeks of school that next following year. So that would have been 2021, 2022, I think. They had more fights, particularly among the freshmen. It was the ones who didn't quite make it through the puberty stage and then went through that at home. And they came back violent. And there had been like four fights maybe a year, and there were nine, I think, in the
I hear
first
this
six weeks.
all the time, all the time. The we messed up a lot of kids. And I hate saying we, because I fought it every step of the
Me
way.
too,
But
but
as a country, we allowed kids to stay home when they should have been in school. And the joke always is like, oh, what about homeschooling? Homeschoolers do not sit at home. My homeschooling co-author is out all the time among other kids with her kids. Like, she's not like keeping them in four walls. That's such a misnomer about homeschooling. That's not how it works at all. They just don't go to a building and learn like that. So, I hear this all the time. A lot of kids are really messed up and have not recovered from it.
Okay, so we just had a question from Matthew talking about isn't a more traditional family environment required? I'm thinking he's meaning father, mother, children, maybe a mom staying at home instead of working in order to m closely manage your child's education and their indoctrination.
I think, well, look, I'm all for family units. I have my podcast is largely about how people should get married and stay married and have, kids and how wonderful all of that is. But it doesn't always work out that way for people, and that's just the reality of it. So, sure, that is definitely the preference. But if you kind of have the education at home. Again, my kids understand when they are being indoctrinated. They know the language. They know how it's done. And they're often asking, why am I learning this? Or what is this really all about? And it's funny because I, again, my oldest is 14 and I have 11 and 8. My 8-year-old is not quite there yet. He is, I like to say he's like still part puppy. He's definitely not like he wouldn't know what woke meant. He wouldn't understand that he indoctrination. He's just not, but we're gonna get there, and we do talk about it, and we talk about questioning everything. So Do you have to be a stay-at-home mom to really oversee this? No, not if you give your kids the foundation. My fifth grader, for years already is fully aware of any indoctrination aimed at him. He knows, he sees it. So if you start young and you kind of teach them at home, you don't need to be a stay-at-home mom in order to make this work. They kind of end up identifying it themselves and coming to you with it and saying, like, look at this. And like a recent example from last year was they were reading a National Geographic or something in school, and the article was comparing the caste system in India to the experience of Black Americans. And my kid came home and was like, look at this nonsense, and knew, at a young age, knew that this was completely ridiculous, and understood that an agenda was being pushed on him. And so, that's the if you teach your kids and if you show them kind of the realities, and again, being an immigrant, we have a lot of conversations about what the rest of the world is like, about how lucky we are to be Americans. Every year we celebrate the day my family came to America. It's a big deal in my house. And I don't let my kids imagine that America sucks and the rest of the world is incredible. And just that information has let them kind of identify in school when they're being taught something that makes no sense.
Yeah, I will say this. I was a, I got divorced when my youngest was in third grade. This was not ideal. I'm a conservative Christian woman. I did not want this to happen, but it did. And my older two were in high school and then college. And so my youngest, who had a single mom, which was hello me, we spent a lot of time together. He is probably the most conservative kid I have. And so it is possible. I would say it is more challenging. I think that the thing that is difficult for the single moms, and I wrote a lot about this during COVID, is that when the schools were shut down, so this one nurse who I became very close to, she was her kids were in the Houston school district and they were in Harris County. And so here she is, she has three children, and her youngest just did not care about doing the online learning. And so she had a schedule where she's three on and three off, 7 to 7. And it was so discriminatory the way the schooling was for her and her children. She was a wonderful parent, is a wonderful parent, okay? Conservative, wonderful parent. And her children were at the mercy of bureaucrats, and she could only do so much. So she would get home, and then her son, the youngest, he was smart. He would log in and be like, see ya. I don't know if you remember that kid who created himself on a loop. It took like months for the teachers to forget it, to figure it out.
So
So,
smart.
yeah, so
That kid's
smart.
going
That
places.
he had going places. I want to know that kid. But he created it, and so he could be logged into school all day and never went to class, And but I do think that the system sometimes is really, and this is why I hated No Child Left Behind. It is discriminatory against single moms. If you can't get the kids educated while you have them for 8 hours in a day, there is something wrong with you. I don't want to he see a homework for a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old even. It's not necessary. They can learn everything, but that's not what happens. The teachers will sit there and goof around and then send home this homework. Thanks, George Bush, because that's it was required by No
Yeah, I
Child Left
remember.
Behind. And which Michelle Malkin, who hasn't been around as much, but she fought heavily against it. And she was right. And our kids were young at that time. And it was ridiculous. I was getting homework for my kindergartner. I was like, this is absurd. So, like, the system can really penalize people, especially the single mom. Okay, so our listener, Steven, said that the goal of higher education, there should be two parts of it. One was what?
Western canon.
Western canon. I mean, it's true, but that's never going to happen. And two, learning rhetoric. And
Being able to argue, I
being
think
able
it's
to
so
argue
important.
Intelligently without a scream,
I
being
mean,
a
even
screaming
just
Mimi.
hearing opinions that you don't agree with,
Exactly.
Being able to hear them and not want to hit the wall or hit the person or anything, I that would go a long way for a lot of kids, and they don't get that at all. They get one lockstep opinion, again, that main melody, and they don't get any kind of pushback to their, you know, bad ideas.
Well, good people believe left, whatever the leftist line is at the moment. There's a really great article about Leninism, about how it's not really, there's no doctrine. It changes all the time.
Right. It's whatever you want it to be.
Whatever you want it to be. The key for you as a citizen is to change and mold yourself. And the test for the citizen is to mold yourself to whatever it is today and to be a good.
Right. Well, Michael Malice has this great point where he says, you know, the language has to keep changing so you know who's in the in-group.
Exactly.
So, you know, colored person is out, but person of color is in. And now, of course, person of color is on its way out also.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, get ready.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, you're about to be very racist if you use the word that everybody used.
So now, is it, because like I was lived in Detroit for a long time, and everybody just, you were black or white. I mean, I don't understand this.
Yeah.
And it never went out.
But person of color is no longer allowed because, you know, too many people could be a person of color, right? It's like,
well, you and I are people are of color,
well,
like technically
listen,
speaking.
Listen, as a Jew, I'm just glad I get to be white again, you know?
right now as a Jew, you're super white right now.
Extra white right now.
You're extra white and part of the oppressor class.
Right.
Welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah. You're fully integrated now.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Yeah.
I always thought Catholic schools were like the last, you know, refuge. If that's not true, I think we're really in trouble. But like, I know, you know, in New York, I know tons of people who send their kids to Catholic school who are not Catholic because it's the only sane place left. But private schools, especially in New York, were way ahead of the curve on the wokeism. They're super woke. I mean, you know, nobody feels worse about everything than a super rich, you know, kid who has had no problems. So that's the target market, really.
You know what, Carol, Vlady Plzeňský, who's our executive editor, he said something really interesting to me once. He said he thinks that a lot of what we see in these kind of rarefied classes is that because they have no problems, they have to create problems.
And so
like a lot of this woke stuff is very wealthy white people feeling guilty because they know they're undeserving.
100%. And there's that line. I don't know who came up with it, but it was like, there's no trans kids in the hood because like, you're just not, you know,
well, exactly.
It's happening on like in the super rich, you know, areas because they got nothing else going on.
Right. Yeah. There's no trans kids really. Like if you, there was one study done. 99% of all transgender stuff is happening in liberal families.
Yep. Yep.
So is there, epidemiologically,
right?
This is an impossible medical thing.
Right.
It's just impossible. And so like the fact that this is happening the way it's happening is ideological. And then the parents that are reinforcing it.
100%. It has to be.
It has to be. Okay. So somebody is asking about social emotional learning first. Let's start with that. And then we'll go to the next part.
So the back to the Abigail Schreier book, she talks about how this, you know, culture of therapy is entering everything and how SEL is certainly a large part of that, where they're getting this therapeutic language aimed at children to let them know that they're messed up and they're not going to be okay. And part of what we need to do as adults is to make sure that the kids feel good and feel okay in themselves, that they're going to be fine, that they're not going to live a life of deep problems because they, you know, when they were a child, they heard about climate change. And it's it really is a giant issue that we've allowed the SEL thing to happen. And conservatives get really beat back because it's like, oh, you don't want social emotional learning? What's wrong with you? Well, like, no, I don't want social emotional learning. We have to just learn to say no and say, I don't care what you call it. You know, like the whole, why are you opposed to Antifa? Like, or what are you not anti-fascist? Like, okay, well,
Right.
what do you
You
don't
must love
you
Hitler.
you so you don't want to make America great again?
Right.
Like, you know, we can both play this game.
Right.
But it's, you know, I think conservatives need to fight back and not care that they seem like they are anti-social emotional learning. That's not really what's happening. This therapeutic language aimed at kids is really dangerous, and we need to fight back on it.
Well, I'll say something else here. This is a very female feminist way of thinking of things. Any mother who's had boys, one of the problems is that their butts are sitting too much. There was one day that they did this fundraiser thing at school, and the boys ran 5 miles to like, and they were just like, you know, they're spazzes, right? They're going around. I said to the teacher, I said, you know, you wouldn't have any ADD kids if you had them run every day like this. Not one, because all the boys were like, oh, and then all of a sudden their brains were clear and they could hear. I would say that men have to get involved with their children's education and do not put up with this stuff. Say no. There was an assignment that came home that was so egregious. I wrote the teacher back and I said, my son is not doing this. Are you nuts? And I said, and furthermore, you will not penalize him grade-wise, but he's not doing this assignment. And if you want to have a talk about it, we can. Well, that was the last I heard about that. But, you know, like parents need to know that they don't have to put up with this stuff and there has to be pushback. So, and especially the men getting involved and saying no, especially advocate on behalf of your boys, especially. Girls are more flexible. Girls can deal with some of these nuances better. Boys need more. I think it's a narrower path to get a boy to adulthood than it is to get a girl to. And having parented both. And so advocate, especially for your boys, and get them physically active. Get them out of the school as much as possible. The best thing that you can do for your kids, all of them, you know, I made sure that my kids, you know, music, and they all are inclined that way. I know, you know, understand people aren't. They all had to do sports and a spiritual life. Have lives outside of the educational system that ground them so that when things go crazy over here, they still have a place where they can have accomplishment and where they're not afflicted by the social emotional learning. It's just garbage. If these schools were actually teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic, I would be open to all of the grand new ideas that they have.
Right. If they were succeeding at the thing that they were supposed to be doing,
Actually,
I'd be willing to listen. But because they're not, you know.
exactly. Do your job. It's kind of like I make the analogy to if you go to a hotel and the bed is uncomfortable, what's the point of you? I mean, the whole point is to sleep. You go to school, it's to teach reading, writing, and arithmetic. If you're not doing that, what's the point of you? And you're going to emotionally teach my child? No. How about you just teach them? Okay. Anyway, that's my little. Everybody, Carol,
This is so good.
thank you so much. I mean, we could talk for a very long time
Yes.
about this. First off, I'm excited that you have children.
Thank you.
That was an
They're excited to be
They're
here.
excited to be here, and they're so cute. And I'm excited that, and with how your career's developed, this book is fantastic.
Thank you.
And shout out to Bethany, who is a mothering machine. I
Yeah,
mean,
nobody
just.
can compete with her.
No one can compete with her. No. Six children and homeschooling them all. And she looks, I don't know how this happens, but she is looking better with every successive kid.
For sure.
I'm like, how? Okay. Yeah. So she's doing great. And this book is phenomenal. Read it. Stolen Youth. It'll terrify you. I think it's a great companion book to what Abigail has written, which is just the introduction. I was so upset reading it, but it's so important because the research that she's done,
It's terrific.
it's
It's really
terrific.
good.
So get it. So Carol, thank you for
Thank you
joining
so
us.
much. Thank you.
And this is great. I hope that your book continues to sell and do well. And we're going to have you back
I'd love
again
that.
another time. So
Thank
thank you.
you.
And for all of you guys who are listening, we'll be back in, we have, I told you guys we have a surprise guest. That person will be here in 10, 15 minutes, whenever it is. We'll be starting to record again. So we're going to take just a little bit of a break and then we'll be back with you. Thank you all for watching and thank you for your questions. And we'll see you in a few minutes. Thank you.